Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Stacy Waite. Stacy Waite was born in Long Island, New York, and is currently a visiting lecturer in English writing and literature at the University of Pittsburgh. Her manuscript, Butch Geography, has been a finalist in over 15 national competitions, including the 2002 National Poetry Series, the 2003 Paris Review Prize in Poetry, and the 2004 Dorset Prize with Tupelo Press. Her individual poems have appeared most recently in the Marlborough Review, West Branch, 5 AM, and in this year's Nimrod finalist issue for the Pablo Neruda Prize. Hi, Stacy. How you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Good. All those finalists.
I'm getting a little impatient, but soon, I hope.
Yeah, I'm sure. But you're going to start with some poems from Butch Geography.
Yeah.
Okay.
This first poem is called On the Occasion of Being Mistaken for a Man by Security Personnel at Newark International Airport. It's like being born again. These metal detectors are like traveling through the womb. The buzz goes off to indicate the birth of trouble. And the gender of trouble matters because when a woman goes through, Jimmy yells, "Female search," and a large woman appears from behind her security table. So when I walk through and my wallet chain sets off the womb alert, I wait. I wait for female search like I wait for the bus, that hopeful and expecting look. But Jimmy takes me himself. Jimmy slides his hands down the length of my thighs. He pats his palm stiffly against my crotch. He asks me to remove my boots and jacket, and so I do. And at first, the woman in me goes unnoticed, but when I hold my arms straight out and he traces the outline of my underarms, he makes that face, the face I've seen before, the oh my god, it's a woman face, the pretend you don't notice the breast face. Jimmy's hands change from a tender sweep to a kind of wiping, like he's trying to rid my body of the afterbirth. He is preparing to peel off the skin of my body as he would the apple he brings to work for break time. Jimmy stares hard at the metal detector with a kind of respect, like the arc of it became holy, transformed me on my walk through. Jimmy is nervous for the following reasons. He has just felt the crotch and chest of a woman who he thought was a man. He cannot decide which way he liked her best. His supervisor might notice he has not yelled "female search," which he knows is grounds for some sort of lawsuit. He's angry. His blue uniform makes him angry, so that when he's patting her down now, he does it with force. He wants her to feel he is stronger than she is. He wants the metal detector to stop being a gender change machine, from which this woman, who is also me, emerges, unties her boots slowly, follows all his directions, and when Jimmy is done, he nods. He wants me to keep him secret, to pretend neither of us had ever been born. This poem is called Dear Gender. Leave me here. Take your scarred hands away from my hairline, its sweat dripping like water over stone. You grab me like a lover, tender and forceful. You make me dust, collecting on the case of an old violin the musician hasn't played since he dreamt he was ocean. Gender, you are not a moon hung over in Pittsburgh. You take what you can get. Send my silence cross country. No money for tolls, no phone numbers of old lovers, no maps to live by. You swing your legs over my hip bones. You make me a saddle. Cold leather of myself clinging to the back of this animal. Gender, I want you to turn me to chain. I want to bleed you out without dying. The Villagers. I visit their free museums, which are often what's left of their bodies. Fossils, their sadly unimaginative maps of penetration, the predictable exhibits pawned off as natural history. I can't get into the nightclubs, so stand on the sidewalk searching for the coins of the local currency. I have nothing that meets the requirements for exchange. I can't get used to being the tourist in this gendered village. I take photos of the lives of the villagers with their genitals packed with meaning, their clippings of body hair falling at their feet like a dark rain. I watched the villagers worship their idols, their calligraphy on bathroom doors, their billboards plastered with gendered smokers, shoppers, and accountants. Where I'm from, we can't afford to let the gendered cut our hair or file our taxes. Where I'm from, no one bothered to learn the language of this other world, where the births of children are the deep moment of naming, and the victims of violent pronouns reach out from the alleyways. No one, after all, leaves the village, not even the tourists who, contrary to popular belief, have not lived elsewhere. After the body. Then she will tile the floor, echo. Then the spinning of laundry all afternoon for a rainstorm waited. Desire, indicted for poor grammar, is singled out in the lineup. Misrecognition, and the highway holds out the names of cities scripted for the horizon, where abandoned homes turn shades of blue, empty, the mouths of rivers, short of breath. Then she will not be. Coming home, the campfires, their hands.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Stacy Waite, reading from her manuscript, Butch Geography. Stacy, I wanted to ask you about the pacing in your poems. Some of it, I'm sure, has to do with maybe the way you read some of them. But even so, I get the sense of this rolling thing, you know, this rolling energy, which is just great. And I'm imagining a lot of the lines are enjambed, and I mean, there's such great energy in your work. Can you talk about the creation of that kind of energy in your poetry?
I think I can. I think part of it has to do with, although I guess what you're calling a rolling, I guess it takes place on different levels, I think, in terms of whether or not I feel myself making or pushing or building a story versus doing more meditative work that I think sort of there's a different type of force that compels each of those types of poems. And in the narrative poems, that force is sort of in some ways where the poem will end up. So the rolling kind of really stops at the end, where I feel that the more meditative poems, the rolling actually continues into the silence after the poem is over.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a way that I can describe it. In terms of process, I write really slowly, regardless of how the energy feels. So in the poems that are sort of pushed with a lot of more quick pacing, I'm actually writing just as slowly as I am in those poems where I'm sort of restrained in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's a big difference in the creation of that force too, that the narrative poems feel more like I can indulge, where the other poems I feel are built out of a kind of restraint.
Mm-hmm. What's really interesting too is you have a number of poems whose titles are On the Occasion of Being Mistaken for a Man at the Airport, On Occasion of Being Mistaken for a Man Here.
Yeah.
So that in the sense of narrative, you're sort of telling us the story in the title in one sense, and yet there's still this great anticipation in the poems. So it's an interesting juxtaposition of title.
Yeah, and that was actually a conscious decision one day that one of the things that frustrated me about the narrative work I was doing before some of this narrative work that's actually appearing in the manuscript now, was that I felt too much, too sort of oppressed by the information that I was trying to give. So I thought, well, what if I just wrote a bunch of poems that the information's already there? Everything that happens is already in the title. Then what would I be forced to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. Yeah. Okay, can you read some of those poems?
Sure. This is a poem that gives away its whole scenario in the title. At a rest stop in central Pennsylvania, a man chokes me for talking to his girlfriend, but thankfully lets me go after referring to me as a Mandyke freak of nature. When he first grabs me, I'm leaving the women's room. His knuckles are locked like fat bolts beneath my chin. My pulse buzzes beneath skin like an old radiator. My breasts want to sink into my sweat-covered chest, to become hollow burrows like the ones small animals dig into soft enough, wet enough landscape. And when he loosens his grip, my head is the roof of a burning house. A woman turns her gas cap. It clicks. This is how we know when we've gone far enough. Of course, there is never anything else to do but leave. My car, a burglarized residence, I turn the mirrors face up. I have no wish to see myself, traveling or not. These days, I fuel up before leaving. I use the shoulders of highways, even on the cold and black nights when urine spreads out around my shoes like a high tide around rocks. The warm steam rising as if it were fog off the riverbank. The yellow haze of it sucked in by the yellow moon. Sometimes I can smell it in the floor mats all the way home. On the occasion of being mistaken for a man by a woman. When a woman does it, I feel more like a man. Simone at the Wendy's drive-thru makes me feel more like a man when she says, "Out of 10, sir?" And she leans her breasts atop the little shelf at the folding windows, smiles. "You have gorgeous hands," I say. I can't even see her hands, but tonight I have license to compliment, to tell Simone I have never seen more delicate hands. In a perfect world, I wouldn't tell Simone I was a biological female until our fourth date. I would include this in the same sentence that tells her my grandparents speak Slovak and my brother is a restaurant owner. And Simone would sway in and kiss my neck and say, "Really, isn't that interesting?" And over dinner with her parents, her father would not forget to ask me about my brother, about whether we could all go out for a free meal. In a perfect world, Simone's voice is a cocoon, an agent of transformation, and Simone is a drive-through queen who gives us all permission to stop dividing like cells, to stop making her leave me on our fourth date and never speak a word about me. On the occasion of being mistaken for the delivery boy by two members of the Girls' Youth Soccer League at the Marriott Hotel. I am at the door, pizza in hand like Galileo with the globe. I can hear them giggling from behind the door, their footsteps pitter-pattering. It is probably their first time ordering the pizza alone. Tipping the driver will be a sweet new power for them. I feel the eye pressed against the proverbial peephole. "Pizza guy's here," she says, "and he's so cute." I pull my red Mama Angelina's hat over my eyes, which are far too feminine and blue and will give me away. And when the door swings open, I am at the gate of a new heaven. I am the cute delivery boy who, after he is spotted by neighborhood fathers, is kept away from daughters such as these. They want me to join them, to pull up a badly upholstered chair to the table and share the pepperoni pie, radiating wet heat through its bottom like an engine. I stay for a glorious hour, tell stories about the band I never played in, tell them that the guitar has just always come natural to me. I am self-taught, I say. I can play anything you want to hear by ear. Shauna is the one of them I love. Her calves carved out like crescent moons as she props her Adidas sneakers atop the television, which is blaring Prince's greatest hits on MTV. "Can you play guitar like him?" she asks. And I think on the question of Prince a moment, his small erotic body, his long hair falling around his shoulders like a black scarf. I lie again and say, "I think Prince is a sissy." I never said I played this role well. The truth is, I made a bad delivery boy and felt shame fall over my body when Shauna pressed her mouth against my cheek and called me a hottie. And although when she asked me where the band was playing next, I said Detroit. And although when she asked me where I was headed from the hotel, I said back to work. The truth is, I played classical guitar on Sundays for my grandmother, who referred to me as her little Czechoslovakian princess. Truth is, I couldn't go back to work. Truth is, I couldn't go home again either.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Stacy Waite, reading from her manuscript, Butch Geography. I wanted to ask you about Butch Geography as a book.
Sure.
You and I have talked other times about this, and one thing you were telling me is that Butch Geography is more stories about gender rather than a construction of identity. Did I get that right? And and maybe you can comment on that.
I think I said that in the beginning it started out as stories about identity, and now it's sort of become, I think, maybe more of a song about the body, are the two ways I started thinking about it.
Okay.
Originally, the title, you know, well, it came from the title poem, but it also, as I was thinking about the space that I take up in this world and the way that my body interacts with that space, the way that my body is perceived in that space, and the way I try to perceive myself and the lover given that space. So that's, you know, the sense of the title.
Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, you're sort of, even though you just sort of connected yourself to the manuscript, you know, you're sort of, you're working against the autobiography or not? That's sort of tricky.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky question. I am, I think, working against autobiography, at least in the literal sense. So that the space, the autobiography as it is in the location, is in the space. It's not so much in the story. The story is just, you know, a vehicle.
I guess. Because I get, whenever I hear your work, and especially now, I get a sense of map, and I get a sense of guide, and
good.
Okay,
yeah, that makes me happy.
Okay, you can tell me why in a minute. That new territory, and you know, when you said in your village poem, the speaker was a tourist in a gendered village.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not saying that I get a clear map, but I get that feeling so strongly, like, here's the map.
Yeah.
So tell me why it makes you happy and what you, how you've interpreted.
I like to think of my poems as maps. I don't know about guides, but maps. I like maps. Especially, yeah, in that poem, I mean, it's a map of another world. And one that I'm not sure, and even in that poem it suggests, I mean, I'm not even sure that I actually live in it. It's just another world that is sort of related to experience, of like inwardly and outwardly, you know, the internal and external worlds. And so in a way, I like to think of my poems as maps of both those of the space between those two worlds, of that external world and that internal world.
Mm-hmm. And almost like the space of the that the body takes up walking around in these different worlds.
Sure,
maybe.
Yeah. Through fences. Sometimes my father hit the dog. Sometimes I did pull-ups from the roof edge or threw glass bottles at the back barn wall. Sometimes I let my body drop from the hayloft door. These days, I do little for power's sake, save when I tie up her wrists with the belt, or after when I fall to the bed beside her against other versions of my former bodies. Explication. Take, for instance, my body, always the flag at half-mast or carving initials. The wind's leave of absence, someone saying, I can't believe we're really here. Photographs and their edges. Take washing the wine glass of a man who once rocked himself calm inside your lover's body. Take the water tower in a town where rows of pawn shops dip into the sidewalks with their old cameras and bicycles. Take dressing a wound, dropping anchor, the long stare of strangers from a train window marked by palms. Take carefully this mouth, its house tongue full of brush fire and pine. If I were a man, she'd be in love with me. This is what Samantha says. From underneath the thin sheets at the Midway Motel, where we can rent the rooms by the hour, and the manager doesn't ask for ID. By this time, I am used to high school girls who wish I could become their prince, their mother's favorite, their well-dressed prom date. But instead, I'm trapped in the constellation of my nipples and the silver moon of my belt buckle. They try not to think of me naked, only of themselves and of my tongue tracing the curves in their breasts. Driving home, she doesn't let me rest my hand on her thigh. We are hiding from the eyes of passing cars like first-time adulterers. If I were a man, I'd kiss her hard at traffic lights. I'd wait at her locker with the other boyfriends. I'd never leave her in the ruin of my one short teenage orgasm. She'd be in love with me. She really would. Telling apart. Let me just say, about the lilacs, I would have to apologize. Also, the winter dread and the dying skin of dogwoods. Open your mouth. I take you home over bridges in rain. You ripping brown bags in the evening. Tell me again what letters I will write when I have forgotten there was ever a difference between one bridge and another.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Stacey Waite, reading from her manuscript entitled Butch Geography. I don't know if you'll agree with this, but I feel or I hear sound and repetition a little more as a driving force in these shorter meditative poems, and I don't know if that's something you're doing more consciously or else it just rises up to me as a listener.
Yeah,
more.
I don't think it's very conscious. No.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
But do you think it's more prevalent in these shorter poems or not? It's
just sound and repetition.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I think the poems are less linear, and so I guess that enables a kind of circling that I might not do otherwise. I'm not sure, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or maybe it's almost like, your voice changes when you read the shorter ones.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe it's that quiet that lets me hear them, hear the sounds differently. I don't know either, really.
Those poems are a lot quieter, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are those some of your newer poems? Or
some of them are newer poems, but some of them aren't.
Okay.
Yeah. I do. I have an inside voice and an outside voice, I think. And I think it's really story that drives that outside voice, that and those are the poems that I know something about. Those are the poems that are easiest to talk about in terms of what they're doing, what they're trying to do. Those poems are, I think, more conscious, where these other poems are a little more intuitive, I think, in that sense. And I am... sometimes feel like I don't know a lot about them, where the narrative poems I feel I feel more confident in talking about what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
In that way they're each taking risks in a different sort of way, I think.
Right. You know the intuitive poems. You do, you know them. I mean, I know that you do. I mean, maybe you can't explicate
in a very different
something.
Way. In a very different way than I know those narrative poems, yeah.
All right. We have time for just a couple more.
Choke. To think of giving birth as a power is to think of being a woman, I suppose, which is to think of being that which I feel most excluded from. Exclusion being of my own making, I suppose I too am a kind of mother. I keep giving birth to identity, and each time it holds me by the throat until I say words. My own mother sings a sorrow song. I can see her folding laundry in the basement below one dangling light dimmed by cobwebs and mildew. If Adam came from dust, I imagine dust hanging on the light bulb above my mother, waiting to name spider behind the water heater, waiting to name woman under light. Dust is watching her set the socks atop the dryer. The morning waits patiently outside the windows. Last night, I dreamt a madman in an airport shot all the women waiting for a flight to Santa Fe. He lined me up with the men, and I lived. My skin, no signs of erasure. Desire only takes mugshots. Your collarbone, the root of a woman's breath. They'll never get the smell off this grass, the scent of my waiting. The river wants badly to be heard, but from here cannot conjure up even a whisper. There are rooms I've loved you in. I've never been much good at mornings. It's the newness that bothers me. I am told I like folk songs and women with long hands. So I strap the past to my back. I take the maps, the dry bread. I've left you this poem at the door. Almost. We haven't taken any steps, though the river is close, we know, because we listen to the sound of rushing long after the rain stops suddenly, as if afraid of what we might call it. I can see your face from here, almost. I can see your finger wrapped around the landscape of your wine glass. We want this day to mean something, to stretch out the vowels of its minutes into pages of words that might be worthy of our bodies. To a woman who has never been my lover. Pittsburgh is as much like an envelope as it is like an island between rivers. I miss you. I haven't written much of anything but a few bad love poems and letters I send to Long Island just for show. It is Saturday, and it is raining. I have been thinking of learning to speak Slovak or play guitar. I live above a drugstore now. We don't have wood floors anymore. I am still making love to the same woman. I have finally learned that she is not a poem. The squirrels here are afraid, the raindrops just as much like diamonds. I am writing to tell you I have lost my favorite notebook, and the museums all look at me like they're dying. I don't think I am a woman anymore. I don't like potlucks or bars or my breasts. How are you? Does the chapel still look that way, like it will slip down the hill and block the road?
The poetry of Stacy Waite, reading from her manuscript, Butch Geography. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Waite. Sound engineers are Joel Grimes and Robert J. Wilk. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, radio made possible with member support, 91.3 WYEP.